Am I supposed to know what that is?
That's the theme song to from? Shag the Movie.
Linoleum Knife.
Yes, it is. And
why? All right. This is now becoming a thing.
Because
every week now we're questioning each other's.
Because I just selections. because all bets so are
please
off.
Please tell me. Oh, really?
Well, pretty much.
I've been very good.
No, not really.
I played Moon River
it,
last
which
week.
Was lovely, but it had nothing to do with what we were talking about on the show.
Before our technical difficulties made me and the song sound incredibly yes. far away.
Well, we've gotten that taken care of.
We fixed that.
Basically,
why was I listening to the theme song from Shag? Because
I just was in the mood. I don't know.
That's fine.
It seemed like a thing.
That's good. It's a song from a movie, and
I couldn't.
You're a guy who likes songs from movies, regardless of how good the song is,
or the movie,
or
really.
The movie.
I didn't have anything on tape that went with any of the six movies that we're discussing this week. So I just
what are you talking about?
I would go. I don't have any Muppets on tape, you know. So I just thought I would go random and what the heck.
There's a Christmas movie. You have Christmas songs.
I don't want to branch those waters again after the scolding I got for
what?
Playing a Christmas song the week of the Harold and Kumar Christmas movie.
Wasn't Christmas time then.
But it was a Christmas
it
movie.
It was November time.
It was thematically linked to a movie we were talking about, so.
You could have played a song about a dangerous method, like that was related to a dangerous method. Carl Jung and or Sigmund Freud.
Well, if I still had Synchronicity on tape, I could have played that, because it's, you know, that's a Jungian concept.
There's a movie about Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Out this week. And
that's true. Something. I do have Runnin' Wild on tape somewhere. See? I did not think about that.
See?
But oh well. See? Oh well.
Maybe if you would do a little more prep.
Yes.
Maybe if you didn't fly by the seat of your pants and took notes and were really, really prepared and rehearsed like me.
yes.
For this.
You're my role model.
This show.
And you are Dave White, film critic for movies.com. Commentator for KCRW's Unfictional, contributor
is that
to
a comment. I'm not a commentator.
You're a contributor.
I'm a contributor of true life stories.
You're a contributor to KCRW's Unfictional.
Unfictional.
And, that's what I said.
Yeah.
And to
you said it real fast. Maybe people,
Unfictional.
This is an episode of Gilmore Girls. You gotta slow down.
And to Slake Magazine.
Yes. You're Alonzo Duralde.
Mm-hmm.
You are very accomplished in that you are the film critic of therap.com, WRAP.com. Yes. You are on What the Flick, which is an internet television show.
Yeah, where people are finding
people,
this show, which is kind of cool.
Where people are finding this show, which is ridiculous. And you are on that show with Christy Lemire and Matt Achety and Ben Mankiewicz. And that's on YouTube. And did I say it was on YouTube already? I said
you,
it was a television
now.
Show on the internet.
It's part of the Young Turks Network.
Part of the Young Turks Network.
And the Young Turks show is premiering on Current soon, which is very exciting.
You are also the author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Indeed.
Which was published in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And now you are in your second award-winning year of self-promotion, which I'm helping you do.
Thank you.
I am going to risk losing Facebook and Twitter friends just to help you sell a book. Because I know, well, I know that the thing you can do on Facebook. A thing you can do on Facebook is block people. And I bet by the middle of this month we are both getting blocked by lots of folks.
It could be.
Make no mistake. We are gonna sell the heck out of these two out of this book
because I have 4 weeks a year to
other
work
books,
this thing.
Yeah, other books you can promote them all year round.
Right,
but this is a book that is time specific.
Yes,
and it needs.
It's now or never.
We gotta hit it. Yeah, we gotta hit it now. Get that money. Spread the love of Christmas movies.
And come Boxing Day, we will shut up about it again for another 11 months.
Correct. So. Until then, however, so much self-promotion. Here's how, for example, you can buy a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Christmas. Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas by Alonzo Duralde. Who was the publisher?
Limelight Editions.
Limelight Editions.
But you can order a copy directly.
This is not some self-published little thing.
This is an actual
real
publisher.
Publisher.
Yes.
So this is this Alonso Duralde is for real. Like that guy from Manic Street Preachers carved that into his arm.
Thanks.
For real is what you are. You have a real publisher and you are a real author of a real Christmas movie book.
Now, if you would like to order a signed
copy,
you
can get a cheap copy directly on the Amazon, but you can get a copy for full price from Alonso Duralde, and it will also have his autograph and perhaps even like a special Christmas present tucked into the pages. We don't know. We'll figure something out. I think that's something you should do this whole month.
Really?
If you buy it this month, we'll
do not start promising stuff.
Put something in the we'll put something in the pages of the book, a secret surprise of some sort in a copy. If you buy a copy, you get a special surprise. We don't know what it's going to be. It might just be like an
You're making this up on the fly.
An old Spice Girls sticker that we have in our box of things. It might be a Dawson's Creek bubblegum card. We have some of those.
Oh.
We have. It could be a many different thing. It's going to be flat, obviously, whatever it is.
Yes, clearly.
Yeah. But why not? You get a little Christmas treat.
Wow, okay.
Of very little value.
Dave White
stuck
is
into
throwing
the pages,
down the gauntlet.
Stuck into the pages of Have Yourself
books.
A Movie Little Christmas. Something flat and mostly worthless, but that we happen to have in the house. I just made this up off the top of my head.
I don't know where this is coming from.
I'm going to figure something out.
Okay.
I don't know. It'll happen. Yeah.
All right.
Just you go to the, what's our?
Go to the Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas page at Facebook.
No, but if they want to buy one.
Oh, if they want to buy one, send us an email at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And we will tell you everything you need to know on how to make that happen.
I have no idea what I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
But
you've promised,
look,
so you better come through.
I'm Dave Christmas.
Okay.
That's, yeah.
And one last thing about...
Expect something stupid stuck in the middle of this book.
One last thing about this book, and then we'll shut up about it.
It might be a coupon for cranberry sauce that we clipped from the Sunday paper.
Because it's Christmas. Take a look
it
on...
It might also be a cookie.
Keep a... No, that would not be good.
If I put it in a Ziploc bag.
Yeah, it'll get crushed in the mail.
That's all right. Still tastes like a cookie.
On Turner Classic Movies on December 6th, and showing throughout the month, apparently. Keep an eye out for the documentary Night of the Movies, Merry Christmas, where they talk to actors and authors and a lot of people about the genre of Christmas movies, and one of those authors is me.
Yes.
So, and it's in TiVo now. I'm very excited.
I'm stoked.
It's a real thing that's
happening. I can't wait to see how much they used of you, and you can tell me what they cut.
Yeah, I don't even
like,
remember.
What were your good lines? Good lines.
I just know that we talked for a long time, so I'm sure there will be plenty of me on the cutting room floor, but that's okay. You know, it is.
It has to be okay. All right, so...
six new movies this
Arthur
week.
Arthur Christmas.
Yes, let's talk about Arthur Christmas because this is a great,
wonderful,
entertaining,
wonderful,
delightful
animated film
that is being marketed in the worst way possible.
Like
people are actively being turned away from this movie because here's the thing: one, it is not a prep and landing movie. Whoa! Careful.
Aha! What just happened?
Careful.
Keep talking. White. I'm just making all kinds of mistakes.
Ouch. It is not a prep and landing movie, even though it looks like those prep and landing specials from television. It's not. It is not an ABC Family movie, which some people said is what the posters look like, but no, it's not. It is not about Arthur, the animated aardvark with the glasses who has his own show on PBS.
I forgot about that. That
was
a thing.
That's what I thought it was when I first saw the title. It is from Aardman Animations.
Aardman.
Those great people in England who did the Wallace and Gromit shorts and feature film.
Chicken
Run.
Chicken Run.
And who did the underrated, I think, Flushed Away.
I liked Flushed Away.
Yeah. So, anyway, great people worked on this thing and put it together.
Keep talking. I'm taking something out of though.
Okay. And there's a helicopter. Anyway, it is a delightful movie. It is smart. It is funny. Gray Drake and I both cried at the end. It's just terrific, and people need to see it, and people think that it's going to suck because it's being sold so badly, and the trailer's not good, and all these things. So trust us when we tell you that even though everything that you know about this movie has made you think, ew, I don't want to see that. You want to see this. It's a really terrific...
Tell them what it's about.
It's okay. Did you reheat that turkey again?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How many times can it go in the oven before
this
it
is
just
the
gets...
Time. This is the last time.
Okay. It is about the current Santa Claus, who's been doing it for 70 years. And so this is supposed to be the year that he passes the baton down to his oldest son, Steve Christmas. Father Christmas is supposed to, you know, hang up the hat and pass it along to the next generation. Steve Christmas has greatly modernized the whole process.
To his credit.
Yes, he's very good at organizing, and his the sleigh has been replaced with this giant spaceship. And yeah. Elves go rappelling down, and all the gifts are coded and barcoded, and every child in the world is cross-referenced, and, you know, it's a very, very efficient system, very well done. Santa, the big old Father Christmas at this point, is basically a figurehead who kind of, like, will occasionally deliver a gift so he can still feel like he's in the game, but really, Steve's in charge of the whole thing. Arthur is Santa's other son, and he's a bit of a klutz and kind of a doofus, but... very warm-hearted, and he answers all the letters from the kids and actually knows the kids by name and not by number and really loves Santa, loves Christmas, is, you know, really the heart of the whole thing. So on this 70th Christmas that the current Father Christmas is supposed to pass the reins, he decides, no, he's going to stick around
Changes
for a while. Because, you know, because things are going so well, obviously because of him, you know. And so so Steve's a bit disappointed by that. Arthur discovers that one gift has gone undelivered.
Yep.
And while both Steve and Father Christmas seem to be okay with that because, you know, percentage-wise, they've done great, Arthur refuses to stand by and see one girl not get her present, especially when she is a little girl who believes in Santa and tells her friends that there is indeed a Santa Claus. So basically, this movie is the adventure of Arthur and his Grand Santa.
Arthur.
Arthur Christmas. See, that's the thing. That's a terrible title unless you're British, because it's a pun. Because Arthur Christmas sounds like...
You know
like
what? You know who doesn't? You know who doesn't care about the terrible title unless they're British?
Who?
British people.
Man.
They don't care about what we think.
No,
they
I
don't
know.
Care that we go out Arthur.
Well, yeah, and that we know? And that we don't
and
say
we don't
Father.
Call,
Christmas.
We don't call anybody Father Christmas.
But I'm saying they should have called it something else in the United States.
You figure?
Yes. Arthur well, Christmas is a terrible title.
What would they have called it in here if it weren't Arthur Christmas?
Son of Santa? I don't know.
That would be hilarious. I'm sorry, I have a mouthful right now.
Yes, there are people who get paid a lot of money to sit in rooms and think of these.
Son of Santa. This is a serial killer movie.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't get paid a lot of money to sit in rooms to think of these things. But there's no judgment in brainstorming. Anyway.
Except here.
Yes. Anyway, so Arthur and his Grand Santa and Bryony, who is a very talented elf who wraps gifts, set out in the old sleigh.
She wraps gifts in this, like, obsessive Martha Stewart way.
Yeah.
Like, there's a line in the movie. I'm sorry, my mouth is still full. There's a line in the movie where she talks about how she only needs three pieces of tape.
Three pieces.
Which is a total Martha Stewart thing. Mm. I know this because I watch Martha Stewart all the time.
Right.
Because I need recipes.
So what, one for each side and one for the under?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And if you're doing it right, if you've cut your paper the perfect size, if you don't have too much and you need extra tape to tamp down all the...
Right.
The puffy parts. If you've wrapped properly with your, you know, paper creasing instruments, what are those called?
Paper creasing
instruments? Martha Stewart's got them. They're made of like mother of pearl or something.
I'm sure. She probably sells them in her line at Macy's or whatever.
Anyway, if you're doing it right, and I'm a pretty good gift wrapper.
You are a very good gift wrapper.
I'm kind of amazing, actually.
I'm only so-so.
I still use more than three pieces of tape.
Mm.
But
then you need to.
That's a nice little joke because that's like a obsessive gift wrapping people who are like, you know, pros.
Yeah.
They're like
three pieces.
Yeah, three pieces.
And we're talking, she wraps a bicycle with three pieces.
That's right.
So that's pretty impressive. I don't even know if Martha could do that.
No.
Anyway, so this movie is just delightful and funny and sweet and moving and makes you love Christmas all over again.
Here's what it's not. All right. It ain't Shrek.
No.
And
it has laughs.
Now, if you
for
like
adults,
Shrek, if you like Shrek, then I'm sorry. Then this example won't like
you'll still
mean
like
much
this movie,
to you.
But
I think the Shrek movies are mostly crap, and the reason I think they are mostly crap is they've given birth to things like Hoodwinked,
cynicism for kids,
cynicism for children, and you know, really breezy, lightweight, no. Lasting, you know, ability to stick around and be funny for future generations.
Yeah, they're so reference heavy. I don't know how they're going to age at all. Yeah,
they're going to age terribly. They're not going to go well with future generations because they're not going to know what they're talking about.
Yeah, this is not that.
They're not that. There's not that bad attitude. There's no sarcasm. It's genuine
characters.
It's genuine characters, and it's clever and it's witty. But not at the expense of.
There are laughs for adults,
you know,
that are
niceness.
Not. There are laughs for adults that are not like smarmy or smutty. Yeah,
right.
They're, you know, it's just smart, which is what Aardman does. So yeah, go see this movie. Great voice cast. James McAvoy is Arthur Christmas. Hugh Grant is Hugh Laurie. Sorry, is Steve. Jim Broadbent is Father
Another
Christmas.
Guy that gets his coffee.
Yes. Bill Nighy is Grand Santa, and I forget her name from Extras and Ugly Betty is Bryony. Anyway, it's really terrific.
Good old what's her name?
Yes, her. We love her. Go see this movie. It's so fabulous. It's insane. Okay, all year long they're either like. There's maybe one or two family films at a time in theaters, and usually they're not very good, or they're so-so. This week...
Hoodwinked 2. Hood versus Evil.
This week, we get three really good family movies all on top of each other at the same time.
Right.
Like, I don't know who decided they weren't going to blink on this one, but it's ridiculous.
So, moving up the scale... Or not up the scale, but...
Yeah, no, because you and I have different rankings for these three
films.
No.
I like Arthur Christmas more than I like Hugo.
Okay, me too.
Yeah. But I really, really, really like Hugo. I will say that it is moving, even though I was personally not moved, because I know that I am made of blackened tar inside, and... It takes a lot to make me, you know,
blubber.
You know, get all you know.
See, I'm an easier touch than you, and I'm a lifelong cinema obsessive.
Yeah,
and I was not moved by Hugo.
Well, okay. The reason I was not moved by Hugo is because I felt sort of pummeled by its insistence that I would be, you know, magicalized by it.
Right.
They keep talking about. The characters keep talking about how magical film is, and how it's the land of your dreams, and I've seen my dreams on a screen, you know, like, and I'm like, how many times it becomes a drinking game?
Yeah, they say it a lot.
The way they talk.
Why don't you explain Martin Scorsese's Hugo while I get myself a plate?
I'm sorry, we're eating lunch while we do this podcast. And I know people get upset when we're eating on the mic, but...
But we don't have chips.
There are no chips this week. It's about a kid who lives in a Paris train station in the 20s or 30s or whenever. He lives in the walls. He winds the big clocks. And he's always being pursued by the station inspector, played by Sacha Baron Cohen. The kid is played by Asa Butterfield. And if you saw... Nanny McPhee Returns, then he was in that. I saw Nanny McPhee Returns. He's an orphan, and, you know, they put the orphans in orphan jail or whatever they do with them back then. And his father, his late father, played by Jude Law, was an inventor and
a watchmaker,
and he created an automaton.
No, he found an automaton.
He found it?
He found it.
Oh, that's right, because he found it. It was
It was in a museum, in the attic of a museum. Somewhere.
That's right. A museum where he worked. And so Hugo wants to get this automaton working again, although he can't. He doesn't know how. And he meets an old man who works in a toy kiosk in the train station. Turns out...
From whom he has been stealing parts for the automaton.
Yeah. Turns out this old guy, played by Ben Kingsley, is Georges Méliès, who was a pioneer of silent film.
He invented special effects. He was a stage magician and realized that you could do tricks with film, like, you know, you stop the film and then you, you know, have a puff of smoke and move somebody out there, and, you know, on film it looks like, bam, they just appeared, you know.
So he and the kid and Chloe Moretz, who plays Ben Kingsley's
goddaughter,
they develop a relationship of various, you know, connections, and you find out what the connection is between the automaton and Méliès and the kid. And it's pretty nice. I was very happy with the plot, but mostly what I was happy with, and I know we're going to disagree on this because we've already discussed this, is the 3D. I think this is like the best live-action 3D that I have seen since Avatar.
I'll give you that, but I think it's
beautifully done. I think it's done with care and.
Oh,
with,
you never saw Cave of Forgotten Dreams, though, did you?
No,
in 3D.
I didn't see that one. I didn't have to review that, so I've missed it.
And
I know that everyone says that that's
it's a whole other thing. But
I know everybody says that's really great too.
It's there's a point to it in that movie. Like there's, you know, if you're making a movie about a cave, yes, why not in 3D? You know, right. Actually.
But I loved, you know, the clock mechanisms all up in your face and the depth and the things swinging out at you and the train and the swords and the, you know, all the stuff that you want a 3D movie to throw in your face. Scorsese wants to throw that stuff in your face.
It was no Harold and Kumar.
And, well, no, because no one, you know, spews things on a Christmas tree. In this movie, but I thought it was beautiful to look at. I felt sort of like enveloped by the 3D. I was visually captivated by this. I
didn't have a problem with the 3D per se. I did have a problem with the aggressive CG-ness of the whole movie. Like the camera, you know, as you can do now, goes in these impossible sort of whirligig curlicues, you know, upstairs and downstairs and through the gogs and blah, 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 which is all well and good. But there's a way to give that stuff a certain heft of reality. We've talked about this in other contexts, you know, where you can make something that's CG that just lacks in gravity and it just feels light and non-existent. Like there's a nightmare sequence where a train goes off the rails and through the Montmartre station. And to me, it just felt so...
I like that scene.
Fakey, not there.
Well, I knew it was fakey because it was a nightmare.
Well, you don't know going in that it's a nightmare. But even so, that was just an example. For a lot of the movie, I was just aware that like, oh, you guys are all standing in front of a green screen, aren't you? You know?
Yeah.
It's not quite at like Sky Captain level, but it's still pretty like... And so even in the hands...
part in Sky Captain when Jude Law winds up in bed with that dude, that Russian...
Oh, yeah.
That Russian
dude. The big, burly guy.
The big, burly Russian dude. Thought that was pretty cool.
That was a highlight. I don't know. It just kind of felt sort of just airless for me, even in Scorsese's hands. Now, here's my theory about Martin Scorsese. I think that there are times where he would rather be making a documentary about the subject than he is making a narrative film.
I agree with you.
Like, for example, Casino. For me, the best parts of that movie are the parts where he explains how Vegas works. You know, where does the money go? Where are the security cameras? All that stuff. He's really, you know, this very kind of cool, breezy camera, almost sort of Errol Morrissey kind of little segments in the film that are fascinating. And then it's like, oh, but now we have to go back to our story. And the story's not nearly as interesting as that stuff. I think in this case...
When Sharon Stone...
Yells for her jewels.
Screams
yes.
about her jewels. That's amazing.
But beyond that...
That is a great moment.
There's not nearly enough of that. Anyway. So for me, Hugo felt like Scorsese wanted to make a movie for kids explaining to them what silent movies were and why film preservation is important. And that stuff is really interesting, but then he had to keep going back to the story about these kids.
I think Martin Scorsese should start Film Preservation Club for Kids. And do like commercials on Saturday morning, like television, like on Nickelodeon.
It's Uncle Marty.
On Nickelodeon, like Uncle Marty's Film Preservation Club. And
next week we'll be watching Greed.
And then be like, hey kids, if you want to join my Film Preservation Club, like
and they get like a little membership card.
Send in 50 cents and you get a membership
and
badge.
An iron-on transfer.
I like that idea. I'm gonna when next time one of us runs into Martin Scorsese,
yeah, we'll ask.
Does he ever come to Los Angeles? Have you ever seen him around Los Angeles doing anything?
I have not, but that's not to say that he isn't here. I'm sure he comes like for award shows and stuff.
All right. Where does he go have
lunch? It would be like Pals, you know, like Pals Vitamins used to have in their club.
Explain Pals Vitamins. People don't know what that is.
Pals Vitamins.
Here's the first thing about us. We're old.
In the late 60s, early 70s, it was a kid's chewable vitamin. And
speaking of chewable.
I know, chewable lunch, sorry.
Your mouth closed.
Look, because the people can see my food? No. Pals, it was a chewable vitamin, and it basically, it was all these different flavors, and each flavor had a different shape and character. So there was like a purple fish and a red cat and a...
Yeah.
I don't even remember what they all were. But you could join like
the purple was grape, which I would eat like two or three of them at a time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Always the best.
I was super vitamined up as a child.
So you could join the Pals Club. And I remember I did. I was like 4 years old. And I you got like a certificate and a membership card and an iron-on transfer.
I take my vitamins.
That makes me cool.
I think Scorsese should do this.
I like
it. He should like breed an army of little kids who are passionate about preserving film.
Cinema,
yeah.
Well, if that's an offshoot of Hugo, then it will.
By the time they're 11, they have to like take a test about Michael Powell, and then so they can graduate. Like it'll be like the Boy Scouts; they have to graduate. They'll like earn the Michael Powell badge, or they go on to the next level.
For Eagle Scout, you have to get the Bailatar badge.
Right,
it's a lot.
Right, you really gotta get down into it.
Yeah.
If you want the Eagle Scout.
If that winds up being an offshoot of Hugo, then it will have been worth it.
Right.
I liked Hugo, but I didn't adore it. I think that there are certain things that Scorsese doesn't do very well. Like there's a comical chase through the train station. There's a couple actually comical chases through the train station, and he has no sense really of physical comedy, I don't think. Or not a very good one. Like, after the first one, I found myself thinking, that Martin Scorsese, he's no Blake Edwards, you know? And that's not a sentence I ever thought my brain was going to concoct.
Well, I never...
No. You know, and then there's like the little romances between, you know, Frances de la Tour is the lady who runs the coffee shop and Richard Griffiths, you know, as the guy at the newsstand, you know, with both of whom were in History Boys together. And then you've got, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen's romance with Emily Mortimer as the flower girl. And it's like, he doesn't really have a very light touch with any of that stuff. Like, I mean, Scorsese doesn't really have a light touch. I mean, he does a lot of things well, but like, he would not be my go-to sort of rom-com guy. Like, the closest thing he's ever made to, I think, a straightforward romance would probably be New York, New York. And even that's a movie that's very kind of...
boring.
No, I like it, but it's gritty and it's neurotic and it's a lot of things, you know, so I don't know.
Let's talk about the Muppets now.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about the
Muppets. I'm done listening to you talk about Martin Scorsese. I stopped listening like 40 seconds ago.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Tuned out. I was looking at my plate of turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes. Reheated for the final time. Because we already did it yesterday. We had turkey, stuffing, mashed potato, and cranberry sauce paninis yesterday. You ever done that? Put all the Thanksgiving dinner in between two pieces of bread. Butter the two pieces of bread, stick it in a panini press. And it's going to make you pretty happy.
It was real good.
Yeah. We had friends over and they cleared us out. Mostly. There's still one pan left, which just came out of the oven. That's why we're eating while
we're enjoying it now.
Muppets. It's perfect. Rebuttal.
I enjoyed the Muppets a great deal. I did not think it was perfect, and I kind of wish I had gone into it not having heard from you and other people that it was like the greatest thing ever. It's great.
It's the greatest thing ever.
It's great, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think it really sort of, you know, it honors the source material and you know, makes me excited to see more Muppet movies.
I want one per year. I want that to be Jason Segel's new job. Mm-hmm. Write one Muppets script per year while Martin Scorsese is wrangling his kid army of film preservationists. Oh, and Jason Segel, I'm just going to run Hollywood and tell people what they have to do. Jason Segel's new job is write one Muppets script per year, just like this one, not like the two adult version that apparently he wrote on the first draft.
Right.
The one that made apparently Frank Oz not upset, happy.
Yeah.
And that's all that's what I hear. Anyway.
And the new Muppet movie has to come out in the summer so that all the Arthur Christmas sequels will not be conflicting.
Good idea.
With the Muppets
but
in December.
I also do like the idea of the Muppets at the holidays. I like that as a tradition too, because when I was a little kid, there was the Muppets and John Denver Christmas special.
Yeah, but.
And that was so great.
But the original Muppet movie, I think, opened in the summer, if I recall.
I don't care. I don't care. It did open in the summer. I know that it did because I saw it in Roswell, New Mexico in the summer of the year it came out. But I like it. I like them at the holidays because they make me feel good. They make me happy. And I like all the things that make me happy to be happening in the month of December when Christmas is happening. So, or, you know, November when Thanksgiving is happening. Whatever, man. So that's his new job. Once a year is to write a Muppet movie. It has to be great. There has to be people writing cool songs. Like the song that opens this movie is like sets the bar. Like it is so happy and so joyful. There is not a movie this year that has made me this happy.
Yeah, and Brett McKenzie.
I got choked up because this thing that I really wished for comes true in the movie, and I'm not going to tell you what it is if you haven't seen it, but it happens, and I was really wanting it to happen.
It's delightful. It captures that sort of sense of humor that the Muppets have always had, which is sort of a certain amount of self-awareness, a certain amount of sentimentality, a certain amount of just kind of rambunctiousness, I guess. You know, if you are a Muppet nerd, there are plenty of things you will appreciate. For me, it was the resurgence of Wayne and Wanda, who were regulars on the first season of The Muppet Show, and they never turned up again. And the shtick was always, they were the Sam the Eagle approved group. They were sort of the singers that would come out on the Lawrence Welk show. Right. But whatever it was they were singing, like, the whole thing would fall apart within the first two lines. Like, the one I remember is they come out and there's, like, you know, there's the little sort of moon thing hanging in the background. Like, it's only a paper moon gliding over a cardboard sky. And then, like, the moon falls falls down. And, like, you know, it's disaster and the curtains close. That was the Wayne and Wanda joke. And they're in this movie. You know, the other two, Link Hogthrob and Professor Strange Pork are in there. Dr. Strange Pork are in this movie. Like, all these
now Muppets. Mind you, these are cameo.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the background. They're in the background. You know, but just if you're paying attention, you're like, oh, my, and hey, oh, look, it's, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, there are the celebrity cameos that you would expect, but again, they don't beat them into the ground.
Right.
The songs are terrific. This isn't even really a beef, but I think one thing that people might kind of raise an eyebrow at is that, I was telling Dave about this. I read this thing, they were talking about how, like, if you're going to write a spec script for Star Trek or some show like that.
Oh, come on.
No. I'm going to explain this.
I'll just eat while you talk.
They said, avoid introducing, I can't remember what it's called, something like the Lieutenant Mary Jane character, where basically you take an established thing, but then you write this character who all the people on the show fall in love with, and he or she magically saves the day at the end, rather than let the established characters do their thing. This movie kind of does that, because they do throw in a new Muppet into the mix, and he does wind up becoming sort of...
And he's great.
No, and he's fine. He's kind of... He becomes central to everything and sort of saves the day in a way that hasn't really been... That isn't set up particularly well. It's just sort of... It's a bit of a deus ex machina. Ending.
He helps.
He does.
He's a good helper. His name is Walter.
Yes.
He's Jason Segel's brother.
Yes.
He's a Muppet.
Yes.
Jason Segel is a person.
Yeah.
This is never explained.
No, never. But, you know, in the Great Muppet Caper, I think aren't Kermit and Fozzie identical twins?
Yeah.
And that's never explained either, so what the heck. Anyway, yeah, I mean, there were a few parts I thought were a little draggy towards the end, but overall, I loved the Muppets. I think, you know, this is a franchise that is hopefully back because, you know, I want to see more from this new crew. I think it's terrific.
I'm going to buy a ticket. I'm going to see it again.
All right.
You going to go with me?
I will, yeah.
Awesome.
Just, you know, if I have time. I mean, I
we'll do it after Christmas.
Okay. The one movie...
After you get back from the Turner Classic Movie Cruise.
Yeah.
Where you will be presenting a clip show related to your book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Perhaps you've heard of
Perhaps you've heard of it and you would like to buy a copy. What email should they email if they want to buy a copy?
Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
If there's any movie that I see a second time before, you know, during the Christmas season, I really kind of want to see Harold and Kumar again, just because we're never going to get to see it in 3D.
I thought
again.
Harold and Kumar was great. True, we won't get to see it in 3D again,
yeah,
probably ever after this
that was,
first
that's,
run
that's
in theaters.
The
yeah. Excuse me, but that was a lunch.
So just a thought.
Thing that my, hurting me. Hang on.
So those are the three family films that opened this week. We also had three more limited release art house adult audience
movies. I would call The Artist a family film.
Yeah.
Kids, any kid could go to see The Artist and be happy.
In fact, if
any kid who can read.
Yeah.
Because it's, explain what it is.
It is a silent film, like a traditional silent film.
Yeah.
The silent film aspect ratio, black and white, title
cards. Speaking of Martin Scorsese's Army of Children film preservation.
Well, that's what I was going to say. After, if your kid has seen Hugo, and after you've shown him some Melies shorts on YouTube or whatever, take him to see The Artist. You know, they're ready to see a silent movie now.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And there's nothing objectionable.
No.
It's got all of the tricks of all of the plot devices of an actual silent film from back in the 20s. And kids back then would go see the same movies as adults.
Right.
They were all very, very sort of, you know, safe and
it actually borrows...
I mean, even though, except for the, you know, the ones of production code. You know,
right.
Pre-code, naughtiness.
Naughty.
But in general, you know,
it actually,
a lot of those
it actually
bar- for everybody.
It borrows a lot from other films about Hollywood, silent or otherwise. I mean, there are elements of A Star Is Born and Singing in the Rain and Sunset Boulevard. And it really, even some visual shout-outs to Citizen Kane in there. But it's
and the star, Jean Dujardin, from OSS 117, Cairo, Nest of Spies.
177, I think.
117.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to look that up right now. But yeah, Cairo, Nest of Spies. He looks like Gene Kelly. He's got that, and he has an attitude that's so great in the movie because he plays a guy who's a silent film star. And he...
Top of the world.
He is. Yeah, he knows just how handsome he is. He knows how to work the crowd. He knows how to milk it. Like every ounce of fame and praise and money that he's got coming to him, he just wants his fair share, and then more. And he falls on hard times when talkies come along. And at the same time that his career is moving south, a young woman, played by the Argentine/French actress Berenice Bejo. She plays a young ingenue named
Peppy Miller.
And she is seriously that kind of girl. She's like, the name's Miller. Peppy Miller. Mm-hmm. And she's like, winks and thumbs up to the camera and all this
stuff.
It's
a silent film, so we're making up our own voice for her.
But right.
You get the, you know, you, that's, you would too.
But they, you know, you see her career rise from, in a montage, it's so great. You see her career rise where she's cast as beauty girl. And then she's cast as maid. And then she's, then her characters, her roles begin to have names. And so like the first person she's cast at is named Baby Babe. And then she's Miss Isadora. And then finally she gets like starring roles and she's like a huge star. And, you know, along the way, this guy named George Valentin, who is Jean Dujardin
character.
He says, well, you want to stand out, don't you? You know, you got to get, got to give yourself something that other girls don't have. So he puts a makeup pencil on her face and gives her a beauty mark, a beauty spot. And she keeps it.
And becomes part of her gimmick.
Becomes part of her trademark, her gimmick. And so until finally she's starring in a movie called Beauty Spot, you know. And so
she's always, you know, grateful to him and you know, they have
from
this,
afar, though,
yeah.
Like you see her sort of fretting over his downfall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's anyway, we don't want to give away the whole story, but it's you've seen it all before.
If you're not into the idea of this, you need to be into the idea of the coolest, most adorable, awesomest stunt dog that I have seen in movies in years. Like, I know that last year I was really into the dog, the little injured doggy on wheels in the crappy Jennifer Lopez movie. The whole movie had been about the little doggy on wheels.
Which is played by a non-disabled dog, I found out later. Yeah.
This dog, credited only as the dog and played by a stunt dog named Uggy. I am in love with this dog. Like, it would make, I would actually, again, just like the Muppets, I would buy a ticket, go see this again, just to watch that dog. Because this dog is a real supporting character in the movie and does all sorts of amazing things in the film. And, like, you will applaud and cheer for this dog. That's how great this dog is. So, if you get a chance, if it comes to your town, it is going to come to your town. It will come to your town, because here's what's going to happen.
This is going
to
be an Oscar bait movie.
This is going to be an Oscar movie. It's going to be a word of mouth hit. It's going to be the
old
kind of
people
thing
will love it.
Old people are going to go nuts for this movie. Yeah. And young people are going to go, wow, I've never seen anything like this, because
I've never seen a silent movie.
So, and it might actually inspire people to go see some silent movies or watch them on Turner Classic Movies.
And hopefully Hugo will too, yeah. I mean, I'd say, I found I'm the party pooper this week, because you love everything so much. And I liked the artist a lot. I think it runs out of steam a little toward the end, and I think it's a movie...
Wrong.
I think it's a movie that's going to be overpraised...
It will be.
...by people who either by cineast types who get all the references, and or people who've never seen a silent movie before, In my rap review, I equated it to people who had never seen a Hong Kong action movie before and saw Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and thought...
I agree with you about
Ang Lee had
Tiger,
made up
Hidden
the whole
Dragon,
thing, you know.
But I don't think it's the movie's fault.
No, not at all. But I'm just saying that I think it's a movie that... I think people... I liked Crouching Tiger, but I didn't think it was the greatest thing ever. And I think people went super hardcore bananas about that movie because they didn't know that this had been done before by other people.
Okay, I get that
and it's
that
not the movie's fault.
Happen.
I'm just saying. I'm just forecasting a little here that, like, this is a movie with charms of a certain size, and it's going to get blown up bigger because it's a Weinstein Company movie that they're smelling, you know, Oscar blood in the water, and you know, and for these other reasons. But you know, it's a charming film. If you like movies, you'll love it. If you don't know anything about silent film, you'll be enchanted by it in a whole different way. By all means, people should see it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Do see The Artist.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to say you should also see A Dangerous Method, but you will not say that.
I will not say that.
It's a new David Cronenberg movie. It's about Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud. It's about Keira Knightley going berserker on screen, which is enough reason...
With a terrible, terrible Russian accent.
Yeah. I don't think it's a terrible... Well, okay, maybe it is a terrible Russian accent.
Oh,
I don't know. She plays a woman who's diagnosed with hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
And she's one of Carl Jung's patients, and he discovers that she's endured years of humiliation and beatings at the hands of her domineering father. And that this excites her.
And it gets her horny.
It gets her very excited. And so, with the blessing of Vincent Cassell, who's always a dirtbag, what movie he's in.
As a loony pants, immoral, troublesome psychiatrist who is sent to Jung for treatment by Freud, who's played by Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah,
so after Vincent Cassell basically tells him, yeah, sure, bang your patients, why not?
Right. So Jung starts... doling out the spankings to Keira Knightley.
After she has...
Which apparently really happened.
Yeah,
like,
this is all apparently a true story.
All true,
and
yeah.
She, well, and to be fair, he gets sexually involved with her after, like, she's come a long way in the treatment. Like,
not that far.
Well, she's in better shape than she is at the beginning of the movie.
Well, yeah, she's not being restrained in a Neely O'Hara tub.
Exactly. You know when Keira Knightley is really losing this movie, because... she really pures on the vowels in the Russian accent. Which is ridiculous. It is a performance that is so bad that I guarantee you she gets an Oscar nomination.
It is the kind of overdue. It's the kind of overdue that I'm really into.
Yeah.
It's the kind of, like, full commitment. Full commitment. to going out of your mind on screen.
When I was at The Advocate, Ann Stockwell and I always talked about wanting to do a compilation film called That's Overtainment. This would be a definite That's Overtainment candidate.
I love David Cronenberg.
I do too.
I love...
Except when I don't.
I love how he approaches basically the same handful of subjects over and over and over again, but like from a different side of the building. Like he's like, we're going to take this way in now. And instead of car crashes and sex at the car, at the site of the accident, it's going to be, you know, a period. You just burped. I heard you over here.
I was moving my head away, and I had my hand over my mouth.
That's what you get for eating while you're doing this show.
You've been eating while you're doing the show too.
I know, but you know what I didn't do? I didn't go brap on the...
Oh, yeah. How nice for you.
So now I know why people are upset at us for eating on the show, because of you.
No, it's because of you. It's you and your chip mouth. You and your Pringle effect.
I didn't chip. I haven't chipped at all since then.
Yeah,
since
that because moment. People complained. This movie fits into the Cronenberg.
I like his obsessions.
Yeah.
I like.
But not every film about his obsessions is equally interesting or good.
Do I want to see this again? No, I just want to see the Keira Knightley clips.
Oh, gosh.
do I think it's pretty rad and you know, stuffy and weird and kind of boring?
It is very boring. Matt Seitz recently pointed out that boring is like an almost useless adjective for reviewing.
Right.
So I try to avoid it, but it is stultifying, this movie. It is like Christopher Hampton. It's based on his play.
I like to use the word boring as a selling point sometimes, and here is that time.
Well, yeah, no. I hear what you're saying on that, but this is not one of those movies that I would
stiff, stuffy, old-timey people in waistcoats.
It was just trying to figure out how to get through the day. I found it airless
until the spanking starts,
and dreary and not captivating in the slightest. I mean, I will say Viggo Mortensen does a very un-Viggo Mortensen performance. It was almost like watching George C. Scott playing Sigmund Freud. But it's just so bleh. I will bring this up again. I sat through 9 hours of Christian Markley's The Clock with one bathroom break. I was fascinated.
Yes,
this movie is like 100 minutes long.
You did
and
that
I thought
thing.
It would never end.
I think Cronenberg can cross genre barriers and still maintain his commitment to being really cool and examining the stuff he examines.
I think he's a great filmmaker. I'm open to him trying
things. He dives right into everything he does, and so do his actors.
I think this was a miss. I think that, you know, he has a real mixed bag of literary adaptations. Like, I love Naked Lunch, but I think this and M. Butterfly do not work.
I will say that I have never seen M. Butterfly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The one good thing about M. Butterfly is that it has, like, the Jeremy Irons moment that sort of encapsulates all Jeremy Irons moments.
What?
He's in a tuxedo, drinking a scotch, smoking a cigarette, and he walks outside of a bar in Paris to see about a block away the, like, 1968 riots going on. And he takes a puff of the cigarette and a sip of the scotch and walks back in the bar. And I was like, ladies and gentlemen, Jeremy Irons, it's all there. Otherwise, though, that movie is...
Here's another movie that's... My Week with Marilyn.
Yeah. And what's annoying about My Week with Marilyn is that I was, in my head, coming up with about 4 or 5 different movies that you could have made with that cast and that setting that would have been far more interesting than the one they actually made. Because it's based on this memoir by Colin Clark, who's the son of Sir Kenneth Clark, who decided to, you know, rather than sort of go into the family business of fancy stuffiness, wanted to go work in the pictures. And he got a job working for Laurence Olivier's production company and wound up being a third assistant director on The Prince and the Showgirl. And so, you know, Marilyn Monroe comes to
third England. Assistant director is basically the guy who goes to get the coffee.
Basically, yes. And so Marilyn comes to England, and it's a whole big to-do, and she's terrified about working with Olivier and all these sort of British theater greats. And they, on the other hand, are all kind of like annoyed at her for her, like, constantly being late and flubbing lines and stuff, but at the same time in awe of her rapport with the cinema camera, which none of them seem to quite figure out. And she's got Paula Strasberg with her because she's all about the method acting, even though Olivier thinks it's a crock. And anyway, a movie about Marilyn and Olivier, a movie about Marilyn and Arthur Miller, who comes with her on the shoot and then leaves because she gets upset because she finds his preliminary notes for After the Fall.
Right.
A movie about Marilyn and Dame Sybil Thorndike, played by
Judi Dench. Really cool in this movie,
really?
Actually.
Yeah. You know, all would have been much more interesting than the movie about Colin Clark and his week of flirting with Marilyn.
He's
just
some guy.
Yeah, he's not interesting.
He's just some guy, and he's played by Eddie Redmayne, who's a young British actor who I've seen in other movies.
Yeah,
like
he was really good in Savage
Grace. Black Death.
He's in Savage Grace. He's really good in that.
And the basically, he's playing Rick Astley. There's nothing going on with him.
He sort of moons after Marilyn in a puppy dog fashion, and tries flirting with Emma Watson as like the young wardrobe mistress. And it's so
Got nothing to do.
Nothing. It's like you just want to get him out of the picture.
What I did like about that thing, I did like the idea of Emma Watson in this movie because I could just imagine after her entire childhood and adolescence of having every single thing be about her and these two other kids. Suddenly she's like
a supporting player.
She's just the tiniest of supporting players in a small movie. She's got virtually nothing to do. You know, she's got one zinger.
Right.
At the near the end.
All of her outfits are kind of just frumpy, plain Jane 50s.
Yeah, and maybe that's what she wanted.
Yeah, no,
maybe
sure.
She was like,
was a nice change.
I just want to not have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, somebody else is carrying the water here? Great, I'll be in my trailer.
But but Michelle Williams is fine as Marilyn Monroe, but there are two problems. Physically, she's not Marilyn Monroe. She's not fat enough to be. Yeah. She's not big enough. She's too skinny to be Marilyn Monroe. She needed to gain about 30 more pounds, I would say, to play Marilyn Monroe. Because Marilyn Monroe had a badonkadonk and big jugs. And there was no getting around that. That was part of her physical appeal. You know, she was voluptuous. And the other thing is that all you get out of Michelle Williams and all she was directed to give is all the stuff you already think you know about Marilyn Monroe. I'm a needy lady child, you know, and I'm nervous and I'm scared and I can't do things and I'm maybe smart but kind of a ditz anyway.
I will say this.
But the camera loves me.
I will say this.
And I don't know if that was really Marilyn Monroe or not.
Well, we're getting Colin Clark's version of this, I guess.
Right, which is probably all made up anyway.
Probably. And here's the thing, though: when an actor you know plays another historical personage that you know, whether it's another actor or like somebody who was in the news that you've seen on television, whatever. Sometimes, even if they are physically all wrong, sometimes they can transcend, and you forget that you're watching actor A as person B. Like, for example, in Capote.
Right.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, taller, all these things that Capote wasn't. But after a while, he's so good and so convincing that you forget that you're watching this sort of simulacrum.
Right.
I had the same moment with Michelle Williams, where I forgot that I was watching an actress playing another actress.
There are moments when she just becomes
Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
And so for me, I give her a lot of credit for that.
Yes.
Because this is a really hard.
I like her as an actress. I'm not against her.
No, but I mean, but she pulls it off, and it's a really challenging assignment. I think she's really great. I think Kenneth Branagh doing Olivier is really great. He gets that hiss right.
Well,
he gets the way that his upper lip never moves right.
Kenneth Branagh's lips don't move either.
Well, Kenneth Branagh has lips, but I'm talking about the part above it, you know. Yeah. Anyway, so I think the two of them, if you're going to see it at all, and you should on cable.
No, you shouldn't.
No.
Then
let me finish.
No.
You should fast forward and watch all the scenes of Marilyn Monroe on the set of The Prince and the Showgirl, which is the most interesting stuff in the movie. Skip all the stuff with Eddie Redmayne.
Whatever.
And so that's what I was thinking.
Watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Well, yes, obviously.
It's streaming on Netflix right now.
But a movie that was...
I know, because the minute I came home from the press screening of this, I put Gentlemen Prefer Blondes into the Netflix queue, number one in streaming, because I need to watch it to wash this out of my brain.
Pardon me, is this the boat to Europe, France?
Exactly.
I think if those the scenes on the set were so good that I was like, ugh, why isn't this just a movie about the making of The Prince and the Showgirl and not about this... this Crumpets little, you know, coming of age stuff that is so not interesting. So there are a couple of good movies inside of My Week with Marilyn, but My Week with Marilyn is not one of them.
A movie that you will not be able to see this week unless you live in New York or Los Angeles and you get your butt to a theater for the Academy qualifying run is Rampart. Am I wrong that? Is this just a qualifying run?
It is. It's going to open later.
It's not a national thing right now.
There are probably is that the only one this week?
Yeah. Because My Week with Marilyn and The Artist both open as real.
Openings. No. I know. I'm just saying because like I know in December there's a couple every week of things like
we're going to talk in the next few weeks about movies that are only opening.
In L.A. and New York.
In L.A. and New York, and only for a week.
Right.
Like, you have to live there, and you have to get out to the theater and see it.
And we'll touch upon them again when they open wider, but we're going to go ahead and, you know. Anyway, Rampart, you saw, I did not.
Rampart. Set during the Rampart scandal of the Los Angeles Police Department. In, like, the late 90s.
Directed by Oren
Movermann.
Directed
by Oren Movermann, who directed
The Messenger.
The Messenger with Woody Harrelson.
Right. And co-written by Movermann and acclaimed L.A. crime novelist
James Ellroy. Yeah.
Who knows a thing or two about corrupt cops.
So Woody Harrelson is the dirtiest dirty cop of all time. Like, he's not just bad lieutenant. He's...
the worst lieutenant?
He's the worst lieutenant. Like, there's... he is... But unlike the bad lieutenant in both the versions of that film, he doesn't, he doesn't sort of blithely go along and keep going. You know, he's on a downward spiral. Hmm. You know, everything is kind of falling apart around him, but he doesn't quit. He won't quit. He just refuses to stop.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Yeah. I love one thing in this film, that his name, his character's name is Dave Brown.
No relation to Dave White.
No, yeah, obviously. but I, he has such a generic name, something I do know a little bit about, that they give him a nickname of the police force. And his nickname is Date Rape Dave, because apparently he allegedly murdered in cold blood an alleged date rapist. We don't really know if he did it or not.
It's just part of his lore.
Just part of his lore. They all call him Date Rape Dave. Even his own daughter, his own disgruntled, estranged teenage daughter, calls him Date Rape. And he's always like, don't call me that. She's like, whatever, I'm going to go smoke crack. You know, like, it doesn't, she doesn't want anything to do with him. So.
Does Woody Harrelson seem unhigh in this movie?
I don't know. I don't know if we've ever seen Woody Harrelson unhigh, on screen, off screen. I don't know what the story is with Woody Harrelson. Ice Cube's in this movie.
Oh.
Yeah. And I like the idea.
He took time off from Are We There Yet? Or whatever show he does now for TBS.
I like the idea of Woody Harrelson and Ice Cube kind of getting weeded up in between takes. But I bet Ice Cube doesn't do that
anymore.
I bet he's a total workaholic. Like, I have this idea in my head of Woody Harrelson as being stoned out of his gourd all the time. 24/7. But I get the feeling from Ice Cube that he's got money to go make. Like, he's got things that he has to do.
Ice Cube is an entrepreneur.
He never stops. You are never not seeing Ice Cube work doing something. Like, he does little films. He does this TV show. You know, I think that he must have, like, a clone. Like, he's the hardest working guy. I don't think that he gets baked with Woody Harrelson. But I like the idea.
No time for that.
I like the idea of that happening offset. Like, is it time to roll the cameras? Yeah. All right, we're gonna put this. We're gonna put the bong down here. Yeah. It's a cool movie. It's a total bummer. It's completely depressing, but it's also really funny. Like, after watching all the Occupy stuff happen on TV and watching all the cops be completely violent and brutal.
Which, by the way,
if I'm not into seeing that in real life. Like, it makes me angry in real life. But watching Woody Harrelson be that guy in a movie, you kind of start
15 years ago.
You're kind of into him being that guy. You kind of are sort of like, yeah, I'm on your side. And he says horribly, horribly, horribly racist things through the entire film. And you think, that's okay. That's just the way he is.
Like, that's just date rape
Dave. That's just date rape Dave. And so I do think, even though this isn't a great movie, it's a definitely a great Woody Harrelson performance. Mm-hmm. One that carries the whole movie and that will make you glad that you watched it. Mm-hmm. Even right up to the ambiguous sort of ending.
Speaking of Occupy, if you haven't read Naomi Wolf's piece in The Guardian about what's behind the police crackdowns, check it out.
Yeah, you should definitely do that, which leads me to my my DVD recommendation. I just read that Naomi Wolf article about what's causing all the police crackdowns of the Occupy protests. And I keep saying I'm going to recommend this movie, but I always forget to do it. Y'all need to watch a documentary from several years ago called The Corporation. It's just called The Corporation.
Is it still on Netflix streaming?
I believe it still is on streaming Netflix. If not, you can just get it, you know, on a disc. It is also on YouTube. It's a 3-hour documentary, and I think YouTube might be the perfect place to watch it because it's in about 25 different chunks on YouTube. And if you watch like a chunk a day, like 10 minutes or whatever of these little 10-minute chunks once a day, you'll finish this whole documentary in the next month, and you'll be so angry you won't be able to see straight because the movie is about how essentially 6 people own everything on the planet now. And they don't care if you live or die. And they especially don't care if, you know, your children live or die.
And they've created a legal framework by which they can do whatever they want.
And they've created a legal framework by which they can do whatever they want. Exactly. And so it is an infuriating, informative, dare I say, essential. We were talking about that word
Important.
We were talking about that word last night. Important, essential viewing. We had dinner last night with a room full of movie critics, all of whom were sitting around making fun of this one other movie critic who wasn't there, who throws the word essential, you know, a lot. This guy does this a lot. We ain't going to name names. No. That would be not nice of us. And we're nice. Yes. And also it's Christmas time. But watch The Corporation and let it boil your blood this holiday season.
Get ready to have some arguments with, you know, your conservative uncle over the Christmas table.
And they'll be wrong.
Yes.
They will be wrong.
You will win.
You'll have the information.
My DVD pick this week is perhaps not as essential, but still pretty great and also for lovers of film. The Krzysztof Kieślowski, The Three Colors trilogy, or Trois Couleurs, if you want to be super foofy about it.
What's up, fancy pants?
blue, white, and red.
Don't you mean bleu?
Bleu, blanc, et rouge. Yes, thank you. The Criterion Collection has just put them out in a Blu-ray box set, which...
Don't you mean bleu-ray?
And it's as is the Criterion Collection's way of doing things, it's they've really put together a great package of stuff. It's got early...
Don't you mean magnifique?
Stop. They've got early short films by Kieślowski. They've got video essays. There's a book with a lot of great stuff in it. There's a documentary about Kieślowski. I don't love all three of those films equally, but I adore Red. It's probably one of my favorite movies ever. And it even wraps up in a way that made me retroactively like Blue and White more. but it's a just terrific piece of filmmaking, and I think those were his last films before he died, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so it's a really beautiful collection of films. They outdid themselves on this one. So if you're a movie lover, if you are holiday shopping for a movie lover, you just might want to pick it up.
We got our copy of Caged Men this
week,
too.
Yes, we did.
In the mail.
From
Code Red. We finally got to hear our own commentary.
That we did back in the spring.
That I had forgotten about.
Yeah.
In its entirety.
We didn't listen to it again.
It was all fresh to me. Hearing what I said, I was like, oh, okay.
I make factual errors. And, like, we didn't go back and fix anything. We did it.
What factual errors?
We did it, and we sent it off. When we're talking about how to succeed in business,
yeah.
I referenced the Brotherhood of Man when I meant to say, I believe in you.
What is your problem?
I know. Shoot me now. I'm a terrible, terrible person. But yeah, literally, we did it live. You know, recorded it and mailed it off. Like
right.
we didn't pause. We didn't do a
there
second
take.
There
was no take. Pause. We didn't do a second take.
It's just us on the fly. And I have to say,
They used it, and at the same time, I'm happy they used it because after listening and watching the whole thing again and hearing our commentary. I'm not mad at it.
No, I think we did okay.
I thought we did okay.
And DVDverdict.com says useless, we're very funny.
For a useless, unnecessary film commentary track on a DVD, we're not the most useless.
I would venture to say that we're more entertaining than Caged Men.
We're the most essential. We're the most essential. Useless commentary track on a 1971 Canadian gay exploitation prison film that you are ever going to hear.
Well, of course, we didn't hear the other track that's on the DVD, so we...
Well, that's probably not a useless one.
Probably not. I'm sure they actually has some relevant things to point out.
Also,
we're just,
on the back of the DVD
goofing.
Case, we are described as worldwide renowned gay film critics.
Oh, and they spell my name correctly on the DVD
but
packaging.
But not on the actual DVD
but on
screen.
But on the DVD menu, when you put it in, they misspell my name.
Alonzo with a Z.
Thanks a lot. But, you know, such is my lot in life for not being named Dave Brown.
A-L-O-N-S-O. Or as his family calls him, Alonso. Alonso?
Stop.
C. Alonso. No, Alonso.
Quit. God, you're giving me the creeps now.
Vamos, Alonso.
You're just whipping out all the Spanish vocab you've got.
Everything I know.
It's impressive.
Oh, I learned it all from your dad.
Yeah.
When he started that time he was trying to get me to speak Spanish.
Vamos.
Without knowing any Spanish. He's like, vamos, we speak Spanish now. And I was like, but that's not going to work. We can't do that unless I already know Spanish.
He's a big believer in throwing you in the deep end. You know?
Yeah, but you can't. There's no deep end of language. You know, like you kind of have to go a bit by bit.
Yes, there are building
but
blocks.
But your dad was super excited about the prospect of teaching me Spanish in one afternoon.
You know, he figured you'd been an ESL teacher. You must have absorbed something from.
Well, I absorbed a lot of Mexican Spanish.
Yes,
I didn't absorb a lot of the you and Pedro Almodovar having a chit chat. Or at the LA Film Critics Awards dinner, Spanish.
You know what? Look,
that's not what I learned. I learned, you know,
only
orale
only
and chingon and things like
only
that.
People
that's what I learned.
Only people in Spain do the Castilian lisp. So there's tons of
and
people.
And you and everyone in your
family.
Because
I was taught by people who were born
right,
in Spain.
Exactly.
But you know what? When
you're talking to people in Los Angeles who speak Spanish, you still talk that way and they look at you like, get her.
Well, look, I'm sorry. It would be phonier of me to not do it than it would be for me to just do it, because that's how I was taught to speak it. But, you know, if you had spoken non-lispy Spanish to my dad, he would have been thrilled that you were speaking Spanish at all.
I tried a little bit.
Don't blame it on the lisp.
I tried a little bit. I did try, because I didn't want to disappoint him,
because
he was all excited.
Well, you didn't try hard enough.
Now
obviously.
We speak Spanish. Yeah, I, it's my fault that he died months after
exactly.
I met him.
Exactly. Hope you're happy. He's dead now. So this brings us to the end of another captivating...
Should we expand on what that just meant right there? When I first met the man, he had just been diagnosed with cancer. And I was new in Alonzo's life. And
it was the first time they met.
And I was new to the whole family. Like, I was home with visiting your family for the
No,
break.
You had already met...
That's right. I already met a couple met of my, your yeah. siblings, not all of them. And
you had not met my father.
There's like 37 brothers and sisters. Up. And... The first time I meet this guy, I walk into his hospital room and he's got tubes in him and everything. And he's like, oh, hello, like this, he's not in full voice.
You know, just like the thinnest I've ever seen him, and just like lying feebly on the pillow.
He lifts his head up
and sees us, and as I come in the room, and he goes, "Hola, why you are still fat?"
And then I emerge from behind Alonso Duralde, and he looks at me, and his first words to me ever in the world are,
"And you. You are the same." And I turned to Dave and I said, "Welcome to my family." And the funny thing is, we were way less fat then.
Oh, I know.
If he saw us now, he'd die again. Because we're so fat compared to...
I would say that was... that was a few pounds ago.
Oh, come on.
Just a few.
No.
A handful of gentle, soft, buttery pounds.
Do you want to look at those pictures that were taken of us before we got married in 97?
I've seen the pictures.
We were lighter than that.
We were still...
Now we are the guys who ate those guys. It's ridiculous.
I'm adorable.
You are. That's not never. That was never in question.
I'm adorable.
Anyway, we thank you for listening, and check me out on the Popcorn Mafia. I'm on.
Please just start. Give them all the plugs.
Well, no. But I'm specifically on Popcorn Mafia.
I know, but okay. The TV thing.
Yeah, all right. We'll get this.
Let's talk about
okay,
all.
Okay, stop interrupting.
I'm going to be quiet.
Gray Drake and I actually recorded an interview with the director of Bellflower back during the summer when the movie was in theaters, and because of various technical difficulties, it never aired until now that it's on DVD. We finally got the episode up. So I'm on the current Popcorn Mafia, and then I'm on again next week doing the annual holiday show with other special guest Chris Gore, and we talk about Eyes Wide Shut and why it's a Christmas movie and a lot of fun stuff, and it's a lot of fun. It's very cool, and I guess I will now also be turning up on Chris Gore's new podcast, Pod Crash, because what he does is goes on other people's podcasts, then he tapes the highlights of those other podcasts and creates his own Pod Crash out of it, and so I guess I'll be double dipping with that one. If you are in the Los Angeles area on Friday,
you better go to this.
On Friday, December 2nd at the Arrow
Theater.
You
live in this city, you don't go to this, and you listen to us. Again, I'll say it again, you're dead to us.
Stop. at the Arrow Theater in Santa Monica on Montana Avenue, part of the Montana Avenue Holiday Walk that's going on Friday the 2nd, I will be screening two Christmas movies that are not on DVD. The 1940s Robert Siodmak noir film Christmas Holiday, starring Deanna Durbin and Gene Kelly in their least Deanna Durbin and Gene Kelly-like roles, and the very funny 1984 Bill Forsyth comedy Comfort and Joy, from the guy who directed Local Hero and Gregory's Girl. The screening is co-sponsored by American Cinematheque and Outfest, so if you're a member of either of those groups, you get discount tickets that you can order now on Fandango. And I will be selling and signing books with the help of the fine folks at Larry Edmonds Bookshop. So if you want to get a signed copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas and don't feel like dealing with the mails, come down to the Arrow and I will sell you one and sign one for you. And you can see these really two really great movies that you are not going to see this holiday season otherwise, because they aren't on DVD, they don't get screened a lot, they don't turn up on television, but they're wonderful and you will have a lot of fun. And then on, like I said, Tuesday, December 6th, and throughout the month of December on TCM, I will be appearing on the documentary A Night of the Movies, Merry Christmas. And then on the 7th, I leave for Miami, where I'm going to go on the TCM cruise, which I'm super excited about. And I'm doing a clip show and a lecture on Christmas movies.
To an empty house.
No, I hope not. But my good friend Dave...
They scheduled you opposite Tippi Hedren showing Marnie.
I know, but I'm hoping that maybe if more people...
Oh, we can't get into Tippi Hedren showing Marnie?
Let's go see this Christmas
There's thing. Some guy going to talk about Christmas movies? All right. Hello, some guy.
Look, at least they didn't put me up against Tippi Hedren doing the birds. So I think right. I at least
is
have
she
a fighting
do that
chance.
Too?
She is.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
So I have a fighting chance here.
All right.
Oh, stop. My good friend Dave Kittredge, who put together the clip reel for the book, which, if you haven't seen it... it's on the book page on Facebook. I'll put it on the Linoleum Knife page. It's a lot of fun. He has helped me put together a hour-long like lecture about Christmas movies and with a lot of fun clips, and it's going to be a gassed, and I'm super excited about going. It's going to be a great time. So that's all my stuff that's coming up. And
oops,
Dave
sorry.
White is not even paying attention.
Dave White has mail.
He is multitasking and checking his email. Thanks.
My AOL
so
mail.
God, I know. You're the last guy. Want to give a real quick shout out to our friends in the podcast universe, in addition, of course, to Popcorn Mafia. There's The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Blowhard, who has been sending us quite a few new listeners, which is lovely.
Game night, guys. We're going to be on Game Night.
Oh, we're
going to
be on?
When's
that? Do we know when that's happening yet?
Soon.
We will soon be on Game Night, guys, so check out
I think we are. That's what I was told. I don't know.
Check out their
Maybe
site.
I'm wrong.
When we know, we'll post something on Facebook or whatever. The podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Secretly Timid, who I can't believe it took them like 5 minutes to figure out that the department store that's based in Dallas is Neiman Marcus.
What?
They were like, what, Nordstrom? Macy's? I'm like, you guys live in Dallas.
They
how do you not
Dallas.
Know that?
How
do you
not
know
that?
This? I know. Anyway, but we love them. And Drew Drogi's Glitter in the Garbage.
I love them a little less now. No, let it go.
You
live in Dallas and you don't know that Neiman Marcus is Dallas.
I got my show tunes mixed up on our DVD commentary. So
that's understandable. That's understandable.
You fog over a little.
You don't live in a theater. You don't live on Broadway.
This is true. The very funny Glitter in the Garbage and the very funny
you guys disappoint me.
Throwing Shade with our friends Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi. Who we hope to get on our show at some point, because Aaron literally lives next door.
Yes.
So why not? Oh, and of course, if you go onto YouTube and check out Louis Vertel's Verbal Voguing, it's very not safe for work, unlike this clean
it's
podcast.
It's not safe for... It's not safe for work. It's not safe for children. It's
for
not,
home.
It's not safe for home. Yeah.
It is very, very funny. So we thank you all for joining us. Once again, you can contact us not just with book requests, but with questions or comments or whatever else at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow
us. But mostly book requests, because those are about money.
Follow us on Twitter at linoleumcast. You can like the Linoleum Knife Podcast on Facebook. You can check into us on Get Glue, even though we're listed under TV shows. And if you like the show, go to iTunes and leave us a nice review, because that helps other people find out about the show.
Tell other people to listen to us, because we need more listeners.
Well, yeah. Our numbers are improving all the time.
That's what you just told me. I know you told me we had a big bump recently.
Yeah.
And,
so more of that.
I don't know why that happened.
I don't know. But
it's not like we've gotten better.
No, God, no. But whatever it is you're doing out there, keep doing it. We appreciate it. Anyway, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye.